what we wanted is to have a mix of different voices, of styles, of kind of writings. And for us, the ABCC of CACB, this project is an attempt to edit the geographic, political, and artistic context in which the Art Center is found.
We love digging physical or numerical archives, and sometimes commissioned work can give us this freedom. And we love to continue learning, so that's a way to learn for us.
Willkommen bei Nicht nur schön,
dem Bücher-Podcast, der beim Inhalt anfängt und bei der Gestaltung endet.
Mein Name ist Jonas Wanderler.
Und ich bin Laura Breitschmidt. Hallo Jonas. Draußen sind über 35 Grad und zum ersten Mal sind wir froh, sitzen wir ganz weit unten im Keller.
Genau, heute treffen wir uns für eine etwas andere Folge. Es ist die Weiterführung unseres Sonderformats, das wir nicht nur Bücher nennen. Diese Bezeichnung verwenden wir bei einer Live-Folge oder wenn wir mal etwas anderes als Bücher besprechen, zum Beispiel Plattencover, wie wir das letzten Herbst gemacht haben mit den Gründern des Musiklabels Squama Recordings. Heute geht es aber um Bücher und vor ein paar Wochen wurden im Helmhaus Zürich die schönsten Schweizer Bücher 2025 gezeigt. Und nebst den prämierten Publikationen waren aber auch alle anderen Bücher zu sehen. Insgesamt waren es dieses Jahr fast 400 Einreichungen.
Das Tolle an der Ausstellung im Helmhaus ist eben, dass man diese ganze Vielfalt sehen kann. Wobei es nicht ganz einfach ist, 400 Bücher so zu präsentieren, dass man das auch wirklich erfahren kann. Und dieses Jahr hat die Ausstellungsgestaltung Sebastian Marbacher verantwortet. Und zwar gab es 6 Reihen aus Absperrgittern, wie man sie von Baustellen kennt. Bei Baustellen werden die Blachen, die Planen von BauunternehmerInnen da präsentiert. Und die waren dann einfach parallel aufgestellt zueinander. Und er hat dann diese nackten Gitter genommen und Halter entwickelt, die man einhängen kann, und auf jedem Halter stand dann ein Buch und wurde so präsentiert. Es gab dann also diese 6 Reihen mit Gittern, die beidseitig mit Publikationen bespielt waren. In der Mitte des Raumes wiederum standen 4 Stühle und ein Tisch. Diese waren aus diesen rot-weißen Holzbrettern, die Baustellenabsperrungen markieren. Auf diesen konnte man sich dann hinsetzen und den Katalog anschauen oder eine Pause machen. Der diesjährige Katalog zu den schönsten Schweizer Büchern wurde dieses Jahr von Sabo Day konzipiert.
Und diese Absperrgitter, die wurden dann am Sonntagnachmittag für ein paar Stunden ein wenig zur Seite geschoben, um Platz zu machen für 3 Gesprächsformate. Einerseits hat da der Gestalter Laurent Benner einen Input zur Klimakrise im Feld der Gestaltung gegeben. Und andererseits haben Jana Liebe und Ginevra Bernasconi über die Herausforderungen von Berufseinsteigerinnen im Feld der Grafik berichtet.
Genau, und Jana Liebe war bereits zu Gast bei uns im Podcast, als wir über Sheila Hicks gesprochen haben. Und du hast gesagt, es waren 3 Formate und das dritte durften wir bespielen.
Genau, einerseits hatten wir in einer Ecke vom Helmhaus eine kleine Hörstation, da konnten die Besucherinnen die 3 Podcasts anhören, die wir zu der diesjährigen Auswahl schon produziert haben. Und am Sonntag waren wir dann auch noch live vor Ort im Gespräch mit den diesjährigen Jan Tschichold-Preisträgerinnen Colin Sunier und Charles Mazet. Zur Einordnung, der Jan Tschichold-Preis, der zeichnet nicht ein einzelnes Buch aus, sondern außerordentliche Verdienste im Bereich der Buchgestaltung über einen längeren Zeitraum. Und dieser Preis wird vom Bundesamt für Kultur einmal jährlich vergeben und im Rahmen dieser Ausstellung der schönsten Schweizer Bücher präsentiert. Jan Tschichold, vielleicht das noch als Ergänzung, ist so etwas wie der Gründungsvater des Wettbewerbs. Wer sich dafür interessiert, kann auch unsere Pilotfolge anhören. Dort erklären wir, wie es zu diesem Wettbewerb kam und welche Rolle Jan Tschichold dabei gespielt hat. Aber zurück zu unserem Gespräch.
Nebst Jonas und mir waren natürlich Charles und Colin vor Ort, aber eben auch das Publikum. Es war nicht nur heiß, sondern es war gleichzeitig noch WM und kurz danach startete der Frauenstreik. Es kamen aber trotzdem einige Menschen ins Helmhaus, um die PreisträgerInnen kennenzulernen. Und nebst dem Preisgeld und der Anerkennung, die die PreisträgerInnen erhalten, wird ihnen auch ein Raum zur Verfügung gestellt, in welchem sie dann ihr Werk präsentieren können. Colin und Charles haben die Auszeichnung als Anlass genommen, ein Langzeitprojekt in Buchform zu bringen. Diese Publikation war in diesem Raum zu sehen. Sie funktioniert so, dass es 91 verschiedene Covers gibt. Und sie haben diese Publikationen einlagig auf dem Boden des Helmhauses verteilt und man durfte die Publikationen mitnehmen. Und jeder oder jede hat dann ein eigenes Cover ausgewählt, das gepasst hat. Und dadurch entstand so ein Mosaikeffekt am Boden vom lilafarbenen Boden des Helmhauses und den 91 verschiedenen Covers der Publikation.
Ja, und diese Publikation war der Einstieg in unser Gespräch. Nach und nach sind wir dann auch auf andere Bücher zu sprechen gekommen, die Colin und Charles in den letzten Jahren gemeinsam gestaltet haben. Charles lebt aktuell in Paris und Colin in Marseille. Auch hier wieder der Hinweis, weil die Muttersprache der beiden Französisch ist, hat das Gespräch auf Englisch stattgefunden. Viel Spaß beim Zuhören. Welcome, Colin and Charles. Really nice that you accepted to talk with us about some books. You worked together since 2008. You met during your studies in Strasbourg, and then for 10 years you were working in the Netherlands, in Belgium, and also in Italy, and now you're back in France. Charles, I think you work mostly from Paris. Colin, you're mostly based in Marseille, and besides your common practice, you're also both teaching, and yeah, something that we're also going to talk about later. So years ago you were already in Zurich or in Switzerland for some internships. Today you're back for the Jan Tschichot Prize. And I think we're going to start with one book that you produced especially for this exhibition. In the room just next to us we have a floor covered in publications with a lot of different covers. It's a project that you started many years ago, 10 years ago, for a little art space in the south of Paris. And for the people who will listen to it as a podcast, describe the object. So it's about A4. It's maybe 1 to 2 centimeters thick, and it's really soft. So really floppy, has a glossy cover, and inside it's printed, I think, on a rotative press newspaper. And we see a lot of symbols and signs that are in a really strict grid, and they form an ABC. So maybe we just start with a simple question. Yeah, how did this project start and what is this book about?
So we've been graphic designers for CAC Bretigny, this art center, for 10 years. To start with, I would like to read what we wrote 10 years ago and which was the program we came up with. Throughout our residency at CAC Bretigny, we were in charge of the art center's visual identity, which is conceived as a long-term research. We knew it would last for about 10 years or so. The ABCC of CACB is a collection of letters, signs, and symbols made in Bretigny-sur-Orge and the department of Essonne, or selected in relation to the art center, its program, and the artists invited to exhibit their work. This corpus is now embodied in a new typeface called Lara, activated one letter at a time on communication materials, which are all considered as spaces for publication and distribution of the collection. And our idea was to associate multiple voices within the same typeface. Well, usually, you know, typefaces are made as a complete wall and following the same rules, but what we wanted is to have a mix of different voices, of styles, of kind of writings. So it's a mix of vernacular, institutional, personal, and public writings. And for us, the ABCC of CACB, this project is an attempt to edit the geographic, political, and artistic context in which the art center is found. So that's what we did for 10 years.
So we began with collection of 10 signs, and now there is 901 signs. For example, the first letter was a letter A, which comes from a shop in Bretigny-sur-Orge. It's like a sign shop. The second letter was the letter B, which is a sign painted on a wall in the public space. We have also a lot of graffitis, like this cool S that we've all done maybe at school. But there was also drawings from the artist because it was a communication for an art center. And so it was related to the artistic program. For example, this cat that was drawn by Valentin Schlegel, the ceramist. Or it could be also signs from the digital space, like Instagram stories. Or the oldest sign is a petroglyph from the Mesolithic period, which was found in a cave in the area. So it's really from Mesolithic period to 25.
And is it supposed to be an open system so you can add new letters?
Now it's done. I mean, it's been 10 years. I think we are done.
And so now it took the form of a book to show this alphabet as a final point. As you said, the font is closed. How did the identity of this art space take form with this typography? Was it posters or was it simply text? And is the font an actual font that you can type with, or is it used as an image?
Yeah, that's a good question. These are examples of invitation cards. As you can see, we always use the signs like one at a time. One communication material equals one sign. And so it's not like a regular typeface where you can type and put the letters next to each other, but more like an alphabet rather than a real typeface.
But for one exhibition, there could be 20 different invitation cards, like 20 different signs equals 20 different invitation cards.
And who collected them? Did you guys go around the art space, or was it with the artists or the curators, or who collected that?
It's quite collaborative because it's not just our work. It was really in context of exhibitions. So our answer or our proposals are linked to the artist. But it's true that we love to go and to work around. A big part of the collection is a personal collection that sometimes was also used in the communication material. So it's a kind of mix between the curators, the director, the artist, and us.
This project started 10 years ago. Did it also take turns that you like didn't follow through, or things that you hope you will do with this alphabet?
Not sure. I think we managed to stick to the plan.
We have our favorite ones, but that's it.
I mean, what's special is that for 10 years you were abroad and at the same time you had to be on site to work on the alphabet. So I guess maybe it was also a nice excuse to come back to France. One connection that stayed to your home place. How was that between Amsterdam and Belgium? And
I think it helps to be outsiders somehow because you have a fresh look on things. I think if you're surrounded by many, many different things and you tend of, you don't see them anymore. And living in Belgium and working on CAC, maybe it helped us to have a fresh look when we arrived in Bretigny to spot the signs or the letters we liked. Maybe it helped.
It's really a context, like how to describe it, like the suburbs of Paris, but it could be anywhere in France. It's like this kind of city where nothing happens. But if you have a closer look, you really can see single voices, and that was an interest for us. But you have to take a closer look.
And for the exhibition here, you decided to show the books on the floor. I guess everyone has seen the room or visited the room, and people are invited to take one book. Can you tell us a little bit about the ideas behind this installation? Because you put it like from the graffiti, from the wall to the floor.
So the title of the installation is a typographic landscape. This is a term that we like because we went many times to Bretigny and its surrounding area. So it's kind of a landscape from which we found and extracted signs and symbols. And in the end, the typeface that have 901 letters and symbols, it's becoming a new landscape of signs that shows how the Bretigny and the Art Center program and way of functioning. And so that's the idea behind the project. So you said, Jonas, that it was printed using rotative printing system, and this enabled us to print many copies. And we wanted the book to be at the center of the exhibition. So we used the actual copies to do something. And we wanted it to be accessible to the public, easy to, you know, to pick up.
It's really a simple gesture, just book on the floors, and then you can take one. And
I think what I really liked, or what I realized when I saw the people taking the books, it's a circulation also of the ideas. You guys went there, collected the signs for free. I mean, it's also appropriation of something that somebody else created. Now you printed a lot of copies of the book, but you give it out for free. And in a way, the idea maybe circulates also in this, maybe let's say democratic way, or at least open system that people can take it and reappropriate it. Has it happened that somebody else has reappropriated your alphabet to do something else, or did it really stay within the cosmos of Bretigny Art Center?
I haven't seen other use yet, but maybe maybe in the future we'll see.
Yeah, maybe the book is an invitation to bootleg it or take it further. Yeah,
something we could add is that many covers are different. We printed 91 different covers, but the inside is always the same, all the books that are printed. And this is something we did a lot for Cac Bretigny, as Colin said. For the invitation cards, we could print like 1 to 147 different invitation cards. So we liked to spread multiple signs at a time.
Okay, so if we just open the book for a second, now we talked about these signs that you collected. It could be, you know, some formal interest, and you say like, oh, this S is nice, this T is nice. We took a closer look at the catalog, and actually, yeah, you really did some work also around the context and for each letter. And it's really also a research tool that has this really ludic part, but also this really serious and methodic way or access to this project. Can you tell us where this scientific precision comes from, or what are you interested in when you do it, like a typology of typography?
So the description of the sources, so there's a kind of caption below each sign that gives a lot of information about the letters and symbols. And this is something we discovered in Roma, where we did a residency. And there we went to many libraries, scientific libraries, and we found epigraphic publications. So these publications are a compilation of inscriptions or objects that contains texts or letters or anything. And those publications are very scientific and precise. And this is something we really like. And we tried to put in this project in Bretigny.
First of all, because we are not the authors of the signs, so it's important for us to say maybe where does it come from and who did that. Also, this methodology, it's really like epigraphic methodology. And we can say that this book is like today's hieroglyphs. And we like this idea of having this methodology, but it's not in the past. It's really right now. It's happening right now.
You mentioned Roma. Maybe it's also a moment to shortly look into Come Vanno le Cose. It's a project you did during your residency in Rome. And it has also this part of collecting signs or glyphs. Could you maybe also tell us a little bit about that and where this interest comes from? You said already, Colin, this active looking and having an interest of what's happening around you to discover like the signs, and what else could be important to you?
We went in Roma, it was 10 years ago, to do a residency at Villa Medici. And there we studied the popular writing in public space, but in relationship with the official writing, like how does it work, like this popular writing and this official writing. Roma is a really, really clean city, like it's super clean. It's like a decor. But there we found inscriptions on the wall, really tiny inscriptions. And we had the feeling at first that it was the same person who did this. but it was everywhere in the city, but it was super tiny. And then we decided to collect them. And we did all the streets, like super obsessed again. It was not about the beauty of them. It was about what they said. For example, there's a lot of letters BR, Amazate, and BR, it stands for Brigate Rosse, the Red Brigades. So it was really about revolutionary statement. And there was a lot of mysteries about that. That's why we decided to collect them and to do a book about them. But it's for this book, it's a single author. It's one voice.
In the contrary to Brétigny, where it's a combination of multiple voices.
Maybe it's the moment to jump to the next book. We will give it around so you can have a look at it. The next book we would like to dive a little bit into is about the artist Valentine Schlegel. She also is in connection to Brétigny, to the art center. And I will give a short description. It is a little bit smaller than an A4. It's around 1.5 centimeters thick and has a terracotta colored cover. And on the front, as well as on the back and on the spine, we have black foil stamps. It's very reduced. That's already everything I would like to tell because the rest will follow later. It's a catalogue about the work and life of the artist, sculptor and ceramist Valentine Schlegel. Her work span from fireplaces to knives and other everyday objects. It's really fascinating to dive into her work. I didn't know about it. Her work was of great importance during the 1950s and still relevant today. And the book was published on the occasion of an exhibition at the Art Center Brétigny. Could you give us a small impression of what was on display and how this project started? Because it was, again, a collaboration for you as graphic designers for the Art Center.
This project was initiated by a young French artist, Hélène Bertin. And she was looking for a publisher and graphic designers. And so she asked us, for this project, we are the graphic designers, but also the publishers, the editors. Yeah, it started very simply. We had a coffee with Hélène and then she showed us her research and we immediately felt like there was something super interesting to do. And we didn't know her work and we were amazed by her way of living, also the way she approached her practice. At the time, there was nothing about her. Like, she was kind of well-known in the ceramist world, but there were no monograph books yet. And we wanted the book to be simple. Like, Schlegel wouldn't have wanted a coffee table book. So we wanted something simple. And it starts from the beginning and until the end. You can read it in one go. It's a biography somehow. So it starts with her childhood and it ends with the last days of her career. Yeah, so it's very easy to read.
And in the exhibition, Hélène shows chimney of Valentine Schlegel, but also a lot of vase, knife, a lot of things. But it was not a complete exhibition because she wasn't really well known because she did cheminées in houses in France, but you can't take them out from a house. So that's why she wasn't really well known. And so Hélène did a tour of France and she tried to photograph all the cheminées.
We're talking about 100 of chimneys. So Schlegel made a lot, many chimneys.
And then in the book, it's really a mix with archives and new photographs because Valentine Schlegel was a companion of Agnès Varda at one point. Agnès Varda took a lot of pictures of Valentine Schlegel. And so in the book, there's a lot of pictures of just her life, not her work, but also her life, because the book is called Je dors, je travaille. I sleep and I work. And Je dors, je travaille was a sign that she was hanging at her door. And
depending on the day, she would flip the...
Yeah, she would flip like Je dors and then you can sleep and je travaille. Yeah. So it's really a mix of her life and work.
Maybe it's a very personal approach or how I read it. You said that her personal life was a little bit more present, maybe. Female artists, there's a tendency to describe life from a personal perspective and less from the oeuvre because they were also women in many roles. And the way you designed the book, it's also non-hierarchical. I feel that you tried
to give her work a lot of space or just to talk about the work and not putting anything else on it. I mean, her work was already super beautiful, so we didn't have to add some graphic design stuff. But it's actually really structured, but we don't see it. It's like the upper part of the book is about Je dors, I sleep. So it's more about her life. And the bottom part, Je travaille, is more about her work. So you don't really see it, but we really construct it this way, like a biomonographical, chronological life and work.
Yeah, I think we can move on to like a third project, a smaller book. It's about the format of an A5. So it's a classic paperback, I would say. It has a jacket with an illustration on top of it. If you hold up the book that you have in your hands, you see also another feature that we saw in the catalog that you proposed in the other room and that you also used here is a variation of different covers. If I open up the book, I see that there's pink pages with a lot of dense text. And between those pink sections, we have image sections printed in monochrome colors, images. And it's about, I would say, 8 texts and 8 sections. The title that we read is Inventer l'école, penser la co-création. And it's a book by Marie Preston. And it translates in English to Reinventing School, Thinking about Co-Creation. And I think in a way, we talked about it in the past book. It's again about this collaborative thought. It seems to be a red thread that goes through different projects that you have. The book gives an overview of alternative education systems that existed in France during the 20th century. It's like different forms which have the goal to empower children. And you were not only in charge of the layout, but you also dug in archives. Again, this time it's not in the streets of Rome and not in the streets of Bretigny, but actually in the archives of those schools. Maybe you can tell us what was the process to find all these images.
Yeah, we love digging physical or numerical archives. And sometimes commission work can give us this freedom. And for us, it's a way to discover. We love to continue learning. So that's a way to learn for us. With this book, Inventer l'école, Marie gave us really big digital archive and we had the freedom to dig in this. At first, it was a bit like a thesis. There's a lot of text in this book, but it's also about super nice project about children. And she had this archive and we tried to put it first. So maybe when you read it, it's more fresh or more easy. I don't know.
More like a children's book and not like a thesis.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's interesting because the images are so present that I would never have thought that it was a total text-based project. Maybe when we talk about teaching, it would be interesting to build a smaller bridge because both of you have a teaching practice as well. If this is also connected how you teach. And after that, I would like to invite the audience to also ask questions.
It's true that for me, this book is really linked with the active pedagogy. I don't know if this term exists here. It exists in Belgium or in France, but it's really about ask what the students or the children want to do, and they have to learn how to do it, but by themselves. It's not about teaching like in a hierarchical way from top to bottom, but more about, okay, what do we do? And let's do it. So how do you do it? And you have to learn by doing. And it's really a way my teaching practice is really linked. It's really based on learning by practicing. For example, I have a class on wheel life after school, on the life and economy of graphic design, which is a big subject. And it's conducted by my students, actually. It's not me. I don't do anything. It's really based on their wishes, their needs, and also their fears of the real world. And the idea is to be really concrete and to construct the class as a collective. So it's a bit like the methodology of this book, Inventer l'école.
Yeah, on my part, so I teach at ANRT, Atelier National de Recherche Typographique, which is based in Nancy, and it's a post-master program. So it can be also young professionals that apply with a specific project. And I can make the connection with Marie Preston's own practice, because she has a university background and she has a research-based practice. Her process resonates with what we are asking our students to do. It's not only about designing typefaces, but also to conduct a research, visit archives, do interviews of other designers, and so on.
Both of these teaching environments resonate through the three books that we talked about today. Are there other questions in the public? Is there anyone who has still an open question?
Hello there. Like you, I'm collecting things all the time. And in your book, you come across a problem that I sometimes have myself. Like when you find an illustration in the street, a graffiti or whatsoever, and you want to put it in your publication, some of them, I think you translated, right? You redrew it. So how do you feel about the change that happens to the quality of the before and after? And then it looks good in your publication. It has the sharpness, the translation. But I often struggle a bit with the before, after. Would like to hear your thoughts on that. Thank you.
Yeah, it's true. We had many discussions about this during these 10 years, because the series of signs are very different. Like Colin said, it could be a graffiti, but also a sign shop or a drawing or something even we don't understand. We use the private use area of Unicode to put also signs or handwriting that we couldn't read. And so we tried always to find a limit between something too rigid, too typographic, and at the same time, not to be too much into the illustration results, so to speak. So we always try to find the balance. So all the signs should go well together, but retain their own origin. And the caption really helps. That's also why we add the caption at the bottom of each sign, because all the signs loses their context, the dimensions, the colors, and all the information at the bottom provide such information. So in a way, the caption helps trying to understand the original source.
Ja, das Gespräch ist jetzt schon 2 Wochen her und ja, mich hat es gefreut, einmal in eine etwas andere Bubble zu tauchen. Oftmals kennt man ja die Jan Tschichold-Preisträgerinnen schon recht gut hier. Weil Colin und Charles aber vor allem im französischen Sprachraum unterwegs sind, hatten sie, glaube ich, viele nicht so auf dem Radar und das war irgendwie auch erfrischend. Mir ist die Sorgfalt aufgefallen, mit der die beiden agieren. Die Bücher sind jetzt selten laut oder so spektakulär gestaltet, aber oft mit sehr viel Liebe zum Detail.
Ja, dieses Unspektakuläre in einem nicht wertenden Sinn fand ich auch so spannend in der Kombination mit den Inhalten, weil es für mich wirkte, als würden sie versuchen, möglichst viel Freiraum dem Inhalt zu geben. Und so die Gestaltung ganz zurückhaltend ist, aber sehr präzise, klar und doch sehr sichtbar eigentlich.
Ja, sie geben dem Inhalt sehr viel Raum. Sie arbeiten extrem akribisch und so obsessiv. Und doch ist es wie immer gepaart mit einer Prise Humor. Und mir als halber Roman ist das auf jeden Fall aufgefallen. Ich habe hier in der Deutschschweiz manchmal das Gefühl, dass man ein bisschen spaßbefreit an die ganze Sache hingeht. Und etwas, worüber ich mich ein bisschen geärgert habe, ist, dass wir die Zeit nicht gefunden haben, mit den beiden ein bisschen über ihren Modus operandi zu sprechen. Das heißt, wie die beiden konkret an einem Projekt zusammenarbeiten. Wir haben gehört, sie sind auch geografisch getrennt voneinander. Übernimmt da jemand den Lead oder sind die ständig im Austausch? Funktioniert das über Videokonferenz oder WhatsApp? Oder ja, das finde ich immer auch noch spannend zu sehen, wie verschiedene Studios funktionieren im Konkreten und nicht so nur auf der Portfolio-Seite. Aber es war schon extrem viel zu besprechen und ich glaube, das hätten wir einfach nicht mehr reinquetschen können.
Ja, weil es ja ein Live-Gespräch war, war die Zeit tatsächlich begrenzt und das Publikum war in einem kleinen Marathon von Talks. Was ich schon auch spannend fand, war diese recherchebasierte Arbeit kennenzulernen, dieses fast schon archäologische, das sie haben. Und gleichzeitig auch neue Positionen, gerade Valentin Schlegel, fand ich sehr spannend. Und es ist immer schön, dass man über die Arbeit von anderen wieder neue Positionen kennenlernt.
Ja, Laura, ich denke, wir haben jetzt schon vieles gesagt und wir können langsam, aber sicher zum Ende dieser Folge kommen. Ganz zum Schluss möchte ich noch einen Dank aussprechen an das Bundesamt für Kultur, Nicole Udry, die uns eingeladen hat zum Gespräch. Wer selbst noch etwas weiterstöbern will und vielleicht auch ein Buch von Charles und Colleen bestellen will, findet alle Infos zu unseren GästInnen und zu den Büchern in den Shownotes.
Diese Episode, wie auch alle anderen Episoden von Nicht nur schön, sind auf Apple Podcasts, Spotify und auf nichtnurschön.ch zu hören. Wenn euch diese Folge gefallen hat, erzählt doch einer Freundin oder einem Freund davon.
Das nächste Mal geht es bei uns weiter mit einer weiteren Live-Folge. Vom Helmhaus sind wir direkt an die Art Basel gewandert. Dort haben wir in einem Gespräch mit den GründerInnen der I Never Read Art Book Fair erfahren, wie sie vor 15 Jahren in einer Bar in Frankfurt auf die Idee gekommen sind, eine Kunstbuchmesse zu gründen.